Remaker's Mark, Episode 48, Reign of Fire. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Remaker's Mark. Here we are in the second part of our discussion of the post-apocalyptic dragon film Reign of Fire. With me, as always, are my friends Andy Wicks. Andy, what is your favorite movie or series with dragons in it?
Oh, crap. I'm great. Reign of Fire.
Hmm, nice.
Nah, it's not true.
Timely.
Well, I'm staring at the books right now, so this should have been a little more obvious. I'm going to say the Dragonlance books.
Ooh.
Dragons of Autumn Twilight, Winter Night, and Spring Ooh. Dawning.
Nice. An excellent
series. Who wrote those? Is that Terry Pratchett?
That is Margaret Wise and Tracy Hickman.
Oh, okay.
And right. Rumored to be the next big fantasy series making it to a network.
Yeah.
You know,
cool.
I would love to see that, but I will believe it when I see it because I know there have already been multiple versions rumored and produced, and the ones that have made it to production have been shite.
I'm really optimistic about this.
Did you see the
one?
Animated one?
No, but the reviews that I read of it were essentially stay away from the steaming pile of dung if you liked the books at all.
It was basically an ash can. I mean, it was putting something out to keep the license.
Yeah.
But the rumors for the latest ones, well, the force behind it is Joe Manganiello. And Manganiello, there we go. And
I don't know who that is.
Well, he's all sorts of beefcake in all sorts of different shows and series and such. And he's a very, very faithful D&D-er. It's like he is a regular, like a recurring character on Critical Role. And yeah, he has a mounted dragon head in his basement. And I have a lot of faith that he's going to do it right.
Huh, sweet. Yeah, I would definitely credit these books with really starting my love of D&D. So
nice.
There you are.
Agreed.
You agree that it started my love of D&D?
Yep, I know it for a fact.
Very good. On account of having his just said it. Jeremy Nilsson, how are you tonight, and what is your favorite movie or series with dragons in it?
I am continuing to do very well. I am midway through my energy drink, so I'm rocking and rolling. And though not my favorite series, my favorite dragon in a series is probably from the movie Willow.
Oh, nice. Oh, I didn't think about that.
Which
nice.
I want to recast on Remaker's Mark someday, so that's a back pocket one.
Yeah, I like that. That would be great. I think that would be a very good discussion.
Yeah, I love that movie very much.
Nice. Lehigh's on the Sky, how are you, and what is your favorite movie or series with dragons in it?
I'm great, and I will say Star Wars, since there's a crate dragon somewhere in one of them.
Oh, Lee Loophole coming through again.
Yep.
Nice. Good choice. I think that's fair. I'm sure there's dragons elsewhere, too.
Probably.
Somewhere in that book of Andy's, there's got to be a mention of a dragon
I'm
somewhere.
Sure there is.
Yeah. Mark Josting, how are you, and what is your favorite movie or series with dragons in it?
I'm great, thanks. And my favorite series with dragons in it actually hasn't been released yet. And it will be the Critical Role animated series, The Legends of Vox Machina. This is the series that completely obliterated Kickstarter records, where they asked for, I think, $250,000, and they earned over $10 million. So it's just, this is going to be a series, not the one episode that they wanted. And it's going to be my favorite. It is going to be my favorite.
Dig it. Good choice. My name is Kyle Delahunt. I will be your host again once this fine evening. And man, there's some low-hanging fruit left. I'm going to go with Harry Potter. I think that their presentation of dragons was pretty solid. I thought that the way that they kind of differentiated where there were like different kinds of dragons was cool, too. Like the, you know, Bavarian versus the, you know, kind of Eastern European one or whatever. Like, I like that they had their own personalities and they had some good scenes with them. So, yeah, I got to go with I'm going to go with Harry Potter.
Good choice.
Nice.
Thank you.
Honorable mention to How to Train Your Dragons.
Yeah, those are solid movies. I really enjoy those. I haven't seen the third one, but I very much enjoyed the first two.
Kit Harington is in the third one.
Yeah. Nice. All right. So, Jer, do you have a Remaker's Mark recommend section for us here, or pick for us?
Yes, I do. It is a podcast, which hopefully everybody listening enjoys. And it hits me in the nostalgic part of my world-weary soul, and it is Lauren Lapkus and John Gabris, and it's called Raised by TV.
Nice.
And they,
yes, I love that one too.
They sit and talk about various 80s and 90s TV. Sometimes it's a specific show. Sometimes it's a trope. Sometimes it's even like commercials, like dopey old commercials from the 80s or whatever. But they basically just sit and reminisce about sort of this golden age of 80s and 90s television. And it's often quite hilarious and usually very nostalgic. And I like both of those things. That's all I have to say about it.
Yeah.
I like it.
That's an excellent podcast. I think it's, they'll have like guests on, who have, you know, been involved in a lot of, the shows that they're talking about. They'll do the, episodes where they do first and last, where they'll watch the pilot episode and then they'll watch the finale and just talk about the two and how they're different. I like that one a lot. I listen to it all the time.
Their most recent episode was about news radio, which is one of my favorite shows of all time. It's fun to listen to other people talk about the things that you remember and or love. And in the same vein, it's an Earwolf production, so it's in the same vein as How Did This Get Made and other stuff like that.
Nice. I will check it out. Thanks for the recommendation. Good stuff.
You betcha.
Oh, you betcha. All right, so in the last episode, we picked major and minor characters alike, so let's do a quick overview of the winners amongst those that we chose here. For the major characters, the role of Alex Jensen, originally played by Isabella Skorupko, the big winner was Mark's choice of Rose Leslie. Mark, good job. Yay. Congratulations. Good
thank
choice.
You, thank
very
you.
Good. Very good. For the role of Denton Van Zandt, possibly Van Zandt.
Fantastic.
Fantastic, played by Matthew McConaughey, fantastically. We went with Andy's choice of Mark Strong. Very good choice, Andy. Well done. Nice job. Very good. For the role of Quinn, originally played by Christian Bale, we went with my choice of Noomi Rapace. So, yay me, I guess. Cool. I'll clap for myself. What the heck? Why not? And then for the minor characters, the big winner there was the role of Karen Abercrombie, Quinn's mom early in the film, originally played by Alice Krieg. And we went with Lee's choice of Carrie Coon for that. So, very good. Good choice. Well done, Lee. Well done. So that is it for the recasting side of things. Now, before we dig into the social media side of things, you know what? Let's talk about our next film. I am going to be the person picking the next movie. So for mine, I wanted to do kind of a genre that I don't think we've really done. We've kind of done off the side a little bit, but I wanted to do something that is a really interesting genre to me, one that I think is really effective during its time frame, but I don't quite know how effective it would be today, but I really would like us to try to do it. And that genre is film noir. And the movie that we are going to do is Double Indemnity, maybe the most well-known film noir of all time, if not one of them. It's got Fred McMurray, Barbara Stanwyck, and Edward G. Robinson. It's from 1944. So it's an oldie but a goodie. But yeah, it is definitely in the Raymond Chandler world of film noir style films. And it's directed by Billy Wilder, actually, which
I was going to say, that's a Wilder film, isn't it?
Yep. Yeah. Yep, it is. And I totally didn't know that, but I'm really excited. So it's a great movie. I think it'll be really interesting to see how we can redo that style of movie today. I feel like there's a whole lot of dynamics to work on, whether we, recast or make it back in the 40s or if we make it today, and how do we handle the bald-faced misogyny-ish at the same time, but then even the sort of females are femme fatales, so they've got their thing going too. But yeah, anyways, I'm just very excited about that. I think that will
awesome,
be really fun.
Awesome,
so
awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you. That's one I've been wanting to do for a long time, and I'm excited to finally get there. So yeah, Double Indemnity, and we will put some links as to how you can watch that and participate along with us. Now, before we dig into our deeper discussion of Reign of Fire, Jared, it sounded like you got some social media feedback from people who were very interested in our discussion of this.
Yeah, normally we post offering or asking for suggestions so other people can play along with us, which we did this time. And unlike most movies that we choose, where people throw out either really great or really terrible or both suggestions, every single person, and I'm counting seven or eight through various requests, 100% of people said, this is cast perfectly. You can't recast it. And I don't think I've ever seen that in any movie that we have done.
That's crazy.
And it's Reign of Fire with Matthew McConaughey. There are a couple people that, just to play along, Martin Kretzmann said not to recast anybody, but to add Norman Reedus because he feels like he would fit in.
Yeah, I can see that.
And he said maybe as the Gerard Butler character. And then Edmund Ordez, who used to be a neighbor of mine, said just for the sake of, he said, I wouldn't change anything, but for the sake of the game, Tom Hardy and Eric Bana. I don't know who he meant for who, mm-hmm. but that works for me. But yeah, every single person said, why would you change anything about this movie at all?
that's funny to me.
It shows that I have the good kind of friends.
That's awesome. I love it. I just love that this movie brings out those opinions of any. That's so great. All right. So now, as usual, in part two, we are going to dive into what we liked about the original movie, what we would maybe change about it from the plot side, the tech side, the filmmaking side, all of the above. And first thing, we're going to talk about dragons, because why the hell wouldn't you? This is a big old dragon movie, and it was a great dragon movie. So, Jer, this was your choice, and you mentioned that this is really a fantastic depiction of that. So why don't you say a little bit about that? I happen to agree.
Well, yeah, when you think about when this movie came out 17 years ago, and you watch it now, and you watch the, just from a strictly from a movie making standpoint, the dragon effects are really, really extraordinary. And either we have reached the pinnacle of how we make dragons for movies or something, because you look at Game of Thrones right now and the dragon in Reign of Fire 17 years ago, and there's not a lot of difference. Maybe some texture standpoints and things like that, but it really holds up well as an effect and as a movie. And then just a step beyond that, as far as the dragons in the movies or the dragons in this movie, Reign of Fire, I loved how they were portrayed as just this ridiculous concept of they eat ash. And so they're animalistic in that that all they're trying to do is survive, and to survive, they just need to burn this place to the ground. So they just make such a great villain, and it's such an interesting take on dragons. You don't have this sort of high fantasy, like, intelligence to them, but they also are intelligent enough to be a worthy adversary. But really all they're doing is just trying to live and survive. And I think there was some sort of random offhanded remark about how dragons killed the dinosaurs and then mm-hmm. they went into hibernation or whatever. But yeah, from a CG production standpoint and also from a storytelling standpoint, I loved the dragons in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
I agree. I appreciated two elements of them specifically. One was how they depicted the bodies of the dead dragons, specifically that one that they kind of kill in the middle of the movie. That when it crash landed, you see what looked like broken bones, and you know that body is torn up just from the impact of it hitting the ground, and that seemed very real to me, as real as a dragon is. And I appreciated that all of the dragons that you can kind of get a good clear picture of, that they look like there's holes in their wings, and they look, you know, what, like worn down, I guess is the phrase that I would choose. They certainly weren't sleek or anything like that. We kind of used a similar descriptor talking about when we were comparing the Star Wars prequels to the original trilogy, how the original trilogy world looked lived in versus this kind of shiny sleekness of the prequels. So I appreciate that these dragons looked like they lived in that world and sometimes suffered the consequences for it.
I have to go back to that scene that you're talking about, Andy, from a filmmaking perspective. You know, the thing where where they have actors doing like front flips and then they like fall out of the bottom of the frame. And then when they come up, it's like the actor who it's supposed to be. You know, like that,
yeah.
That classic effect. Like they basically did that with the way that dragon crashed, where the dragon was like CG while it was crashing. And then there was a big puff of dust. And then when the dust settled, it was a practical effect. Like it was a part. And I loved it. It was so good. It was by far one of the best versions of that I've ever seen. Because usually when that happens, you can kind of tell where the line draws. And obviously I know when it happened, but man, that was so damned effective. I was really impressed with that. But that just made me really happy. I was like, good on you. Good on you. Nice work.
Nice crashing dragon there.
Good job. Way to set the bar high. One of the things that's interesting to me about dragons is, for something that doesn't exist at all, really, right? Like we have never seen.
No, they're real.
In person, I have never seen one flying around the sky. So I don't know what they actually look like, right? So I think you've got kind of the Jurassic Park aspect of it, where like we've seen what brontosauruses have been illustrated like, and so we think we know what a brontosaurus looks like, what a T-Rex looks like, etc. But dragons have had so many different sort of presentations of it. Like you get kind of the common elements, the breathing fire, the big wings, the tail, but filling in the blanks there is not like a definitive dragon. So I feel like, I don't know. It's like it kind of creates an uncanny valley for all dragons in that you don't know which one looks most realistic. But that said, people are super opinionated about it because they're like, well, that dragon doesn't look like a dragon. It's like, how do you know what a dragon looks like? Like nobody has seen a dragon. So it's this really weird thing that is this strange kind of gap in it that I just don't quite understand. But I thought that was kind of fascinating with dragons as a whole. That said, I thought these were perfect. I thought they were really, really good. Jer, I am 100% in agreement with you there that I thought it was like as good as kind of what we've seen today. I think the only thing that they do now that they didn't do then is integrate actors and actresses with a CG dragon. So I feel like if they tried to do that back then, you would kind of have the Anakin riding the Reek in Attack of the Clones, like that real awkward, like he's clearly riding like a Buckham Bronco machine at a bar and they're just blue screening it or whatever. But like, you know, that I think is what they're doing now to integrate that better. But that is a whole lot harder to do. But that said, I got to say, the dragons were really good.
To piggyback on that, I really liked how they were constructed from a narrative standpoint, I guess. Like the idea that they spray these two different kinds of chemicals from two different glands, that's what make fire. And like, I just like this. I like that they thought about the science of dragons.
That they can create instant napalm with their saliva glands.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like that's so dumb. And they didn't have to explain that. Like we all know dragons breathe fire. That's just like, duh. But I like that they created some science around it, and they did base it on creatures who do something very similar to that. I can't remember if it's a spider or if it's a salamander or something.
You said science with air quotes, right?
Sure.
Or no air quotes when you're talking about a bombardier beetle.
That's what it is.
Which sprays fire out of its butthole.
With two different kinds of chemicals.
I'm sorry, cloaca hole.
Thank you for the clarification. That's important.
Is that how it expresses its anal glands?
That's how I would.
Wow.
On a slightly different note, as far as dragons, I really enjoyed how... I like that this movie sort of has the allegory of a classic fairy tale without really trying to overhandedly do that. Gerard Butler calls Christian Bale Sir King Arthur at one point. They're holed up in a castle for crying out loud. Stupid McConaughey wields an axe at one point. Like it's all of these little sort of medieval elements that are just sort of there and not quite explained, but they sort of make sense. And I like that. I like that it's not so heavy handed, but it's just all there to have some kind of consistent feeling theme to it in this post-apocalypse dragon movie.
And then they do a Star Wars play and they call Luke and Vader the White Knight and the Black Knight.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Yep. Yeah, absolutely.
That's a good call. That's a really good call out. I appreciate that.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that. And I like that that it does take that form, and then they turn it grim, you know, make it the post-apocalyptic whole shtick. You know, then the dragons are nicely animalistic to go along with that realism, dragon realism.
Yeah, say more about that, Mark. So you've got a point here about how you appreciate them as not only as kind of a fantasy creature, but as an animal. Why don't you say a bit more about that?
Yeah. So I made this comment in our pre-production notes that I thought that the dragons weren't smart. And I think there's some context that I should clarify, that I'm personally am used to dragons who speak three languages and are 17th level spellcasters because I'm a dungeon master. And it's refreshing to have a really actually nicely done story with dragons that are just beasts. You know, and you know, Jared talked about this a little bit, but they behave like animals that are trying to survive, and I think the film does a really good job of making them that. There is a little bit of intelligence on par with intelligent animals that they show, but still animals, and not big lizardy wizards. Lizard wizards, those.
Yes, lewizards.
Yep.
Got it. I think that's a good clarification. I think that's important. I didn't have hard qualms with what you said, but I was like, you know what? I feel like they did a good job of balancing the smarts. I mean, you can, when making this kind of movie, you can make them too smart as well, where they're, you know, basically that they outsmart you at every turn. And I think that the word that you use there is savage. I feel like they balance the cleverness of them and the savagery really well. So it feels like, you know, however the setup happened, where they roll all their jeeps and tanks into that what is clearly an ambush area, like whoever or whatever set that up, like they're still taking advantage of it. So the male dragon is clearly going to be like, ha, I got you. So, you know, they're at least smart enough to know when people are trapped in a fun little honeypot of doom.
One last thing about dragons before we turn over to what I assume is some brilliant points by Andy.
I don't think this will be the last thing about dragons.
Probably not. the only problem that I had with the dragons in the movie is the consistency of scale, and not dragon scales, but they sort of showed when they first get to London, you see this like massive giant male dragon eating the smaller females, but then when they go fight it, it's like the same exact size.
I agree with you on that.
As the other one that they fought earlier and killed, so that it's a small qualm, but it's a scale qualm.
Fair enough. Also, screw the patriarchy. So, moving on from a performance standpoint,
right.
Andy, it sounds like you have some comments with regards to the performances in this film. It's all bold, so I'm very intrigued to see what you're going to say.
Let me navigate this one a little bit first. This movie, as Jer very eloquently put it, as good as it should have been, but worse than it. I forget how he said it. Much more eloquently than what I did. The story of this movie, I actually quite enjoyed. The plot points of it, I thought, were very interesting, but the actual acting performances by the lead actors, I did not very much enjoy, because it somehow felt forced and over the top in a lot of ways to me that wasn't necessary for the tension to exist in this movie. I mean, they're hiding, or they're trying to survive against these dragons. They're essentially this constant tension of, you know, two eyes on the sky when you're awake, one eye on the sky when you're asleep. That McConaughey's performance was so over the top, and it's hard to understand why until quite a ways into the film. It's like the director just kind of told everyone, he used the George Lucas method of faster, more intense, mm-hmm. or whatever, you know. And it just didn't work for me. It fell flat in a lot of ways that seemed like, with that much acting talent at your disposal, this could have been much better. So
I loved every second of the McConaughey over the top.
it didn't work for me. It was I don't know why. I'm still trying to pinpoint why it didn't work for me. And I haven't gotten there yet. I think it's because McConaughey to me, I don't know, maybe it was because I was seeing was Sahara, or I was seeing him in like Magic Mike or something else. And it just kind of made me kind of go a little bit, you know, I needed maybe a different villain, perhaps. I don't know.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like McConaughey's problem.
Why do you keep thinking he's the villain?
Because to me, he is the villain.
He is the villain, but he's not the big bad.
He's an anti-hero.
Yeah,
he's an anti-hero. Yep. Okay. He is. I mean, he's an asshole, and that's. He's an antagonist. Perhaps maybe is
that's the correct word.
I guess
is the word I'm looking for. But really, he also is the person who coerces everyone else into doing his bidding, in a way.
So he's a perfect symbol of America.
I mean, in that sense, you're right. He is. I actually thought about that during this. I'm like, wow, they are really just depicting, like, you know, America, Team America, World Police, kind of a thing.
Doesn't Gerard Butler at one point go, Americans, the only thing worse than dragons or something?
Yeah,
like that.
Yeah, and that was one of the like, kind of the ham-handed lines, ham-fisted lines. But anyway, yeah, I don't know. I felt like it was a little maybe too ham-fisted.
I think not so much the performances, which are, you know, whatever they are. They're exactly what they're supposed to be, I suppose, based on my original point. But I just, to me, more importantly, I thought the dialogue was so bad at points that it took away from what it could have been. Some of it was dumb because it was cheesy, and some of it was dumb because it just didn't make sense, and some of it was dumb because it was just like so. Like, we need to explain a lot of things right now, so we're just going to let Matthew McConaughey explain it all in one just big chunk right now. And sure, there are times and moments where big exposition dumps should happen, but they did not do them in a way that made any kind of sense very often.
Yeah, I'd agree. I feel like a lot of the dialogue in this movie are they came from like a little notebook that that the writers kept in their pocket. And it's like, okay, we got to work in these lines. Okay, not working. Let's wedge in these lines. And
yeah,
and it didn't feel natural. Like why does Quinn start cracking jokes at the end when they get to London? Like he's grim for the whole movie, and then all of a sudden he's a cut up. It's a lot of it felt forced.
I felt like McConaughey was maybe miscast in this. I feel like his he was maybe trying too hard, like with what Jer said earlier about, you know, when he was on set he wanted everyone to refer to him by his character's name.
It works for Daniel Day-Lewis.
Yeah, like he's trying too hard, and maybe that comes across in the performance, and where, you know, he's supposed to come off as very menacing. It doesn't really feel that way. Whereas a movie like Frailty, I'm much more intimidated by his character in that than I was in this. I don't know why exactly, but I have a feeling it has to do with maybe just he was putting too much into it. He was, I don't want to say overacting, but you know, along
you
those lines. Okay, he was overacting.
100%, yeah.
And I loved it.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, is you have to get there with it. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. It's in order to enjoy it, you just have to accept, like, all right, this is the journey we're going on with McConaughey in this one. And if you
take me away, Matthew McConaughey.
Well, yeah, and with all that said, I mean, I really enjoyed the movie. I mean, I had never seen it prior to watching it for this, but I didn't know what to think of it going into it, but I ended up really liking it. So, yeah. I mean, the performances are what they are. And, you know, I just, you know, for better or worse, I think they're great for the movie.
To me, it's that same thing as Big Trouble in Little China or movies of that vein. Like, it's so ridiculous. Kurt Russell is so bizarre and over the top in that movie, and just basically doing a John Wayne impression the whole time. But you buy it, and it totally makes sense within the universe of that movie. And I think that McConaughey, for whatever the universe is of this movie, like, it just it makes sense. And would I want it a different way? Maybe. I don't know. But the way that it is, yeah, I buy it.
I want to just kind of qualify my statements. I am coming across as coming down hard on this movie. I did enjoy the movie. I want to be clear that I did enjoy the ride that I went on this movie. I am picking it apart for the sake of a remake, but yeah, I'd watch it again.
We can rebuild it stronger, faster.
We have the technology.
I'll loop back just a little bit to something I mentioned in the first half of it. Was I was very pleasantly surprised by Gerard Butler, and it sounds like I need to dive into his sort of oeuvre a bit more. But I thought he was great. I thought he was a good sidekick, and I got to say, like, his death scene was really impactful to me. I think they did that incredibly well. You know, it could not have been more cliche as far as how it went, but man, did it land for me. Did you guys feel the same way? Like, did that hit you kind of in the same way of like, oh man, that's hard.
Totally. Yeah. I think he did a great job in this movie.
Yeah. Agreed.
I don't agree.
No, you weren't as big a fan.
No. And perhaps it was because you tipped it off to me before I finished watching the movie, but that was to me, I don't know. It felt telegraphed to me. There's a lot of things in this movie that seem like, oh, you could see that coming from a mile away. And I think I was in a poor mindset for that particular scene, simply because I think you guys were having a text conversation about it or something like that. Had I not seen that text conversation prior to it, might have hit me a little bit harder. But yeah, I was like, oh, here it comes.
Uh-oh. Yeah. 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 Fair enough. I get you. Influences come from strange places sometimes. That's okay. Jerry, you touched on this a little bit, but I think the last thing we want to talk about here is just sort of a little bit of a identity crisis that this film had. And do you want to talk a little bit more about what you thought about that and what you would prefer to have as opposed to kind of what it was here?
Yeah, I kind of hit some of these points already, but it feels to me like this is two different movies. And I don't know if that's a writing reshoot kind of thing to get it actually greenlit by a studio, but it feels like it's this dark, dreary, post-apocalyptic movie that also has dragons in it, which is a cool take on that genre. But then it's also this sort of cheesy, over-the-top action movie. And I think it does, at times, both of those two things really well. If this is just nothing but a present-day or futuristic dragon movie that's an over-the-top action movie, but McConaughey nailed it. If this is a dreary post-apocalyptic survival film, then at times Christian Bale nailed it. And the setting and the way that they wrote a lot of the things with the tomato garden and the guy stealing it and, you know, the seizing control and of the castle and whatnot, like all that's really cool. But the fact that they kind of sort of smash them together is what creates a little bit of dissonance for me. And I want to see both of those movies independent of each other. I'd like to peel it away a little bit and see, make both of those and see what they both look like. But like Andy said, and we've touched on a few times, the whole idea of this movie, the story of this movie is really cool. Just the idea that it's the future, everything's laid waste, and it's because of dragons. Like, I think that's pretty awesome. And touching on what I said earlier, the fact that they use some of these alliterative techniques to kind of tell a fairy tale, but also a post-apocalyptic fairy tale, I think it's really great. And I don't think it needed a lot of the action tropes that McConaughey ended up bringing, or his character sort of brought, with some of the dopey lines and dialogue and bringing that into the movie in that way. Like all of the other things, even like the helicopter hunting the dragon with the helicopter and the parachuters or whatever, like that was super cool. but it doesn't have to be cheesy cool. It can be post-apocalyptic cool.
I, for one, really enjoyed the mashup that this movie made, and I don't think that it have really suffered any sort of identity crisis. That it didn't, it doesn't need to be more of one thing or more of the other. But it kind of sounds to me like, Jerry, you're saying that it could be stronger as either one of those things, or, you know, peel them apart, make them two different movies, then both of those movies would be stronger as, you know, yes, a pure post-apoc movie or a pure action-y movie.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, I would agree if one were to say that that this movie maybe just tried to do too much, and it could have trimmed some fat here and there and replaced stupid lines with good lines. And you know, just was a little bit more judicious about the content. I'm not sure if I actually finished that sentence.
No, I think you did. I don't remember. But yeah, I think you're right. I think this movie is very close to being an exceptionally good, fun. I mean, and everybody had fun watching it. And based on the Facebook feedback, like, people love this movie for what it is. It's not trying too hard to be anything more than that. But I think that it could really, it could be very close to something that elevates it to another level.
I'd agree.
Which is where we come in.
I think your comment about sort of the chicken and the egg of what led what, you know, it could have been that they were planning a small movie with a different director and then a bigger director got signed on, or they're planning a smaller movie and then the Matthew McConaughey and Christian Bale got signed on or something like that. You know what I mean? So I feel like the origin of both of those are in there, or it could just be that they ended up getting like really badass dragons out of it and then decided to, you know, not make it a small movie anymore. So, you know, it'll be curious to see sort of the origin of that and where that came about. But yeah, I think they balanced it well. There were definitely some dumb things. I totally agree. McConaughey mostly. But all in all, I still think it was an enjoyable, a thrill ride, a minute. All right, cool. Well, I think that wraps up the second half of our episode. And with that, our discussion of Reign of Fire. Remakers Mark is a proud member of the Math is Hard Network. To find out more information about this podcast or any other podcast on the network, check us out at mathishard.net. There you will find show notes with links to all of the people, movies, and links discussed in this episode. This information is also attached to the show file in the podcast client of your choice. You can find us anywhere you listen to podcasts, including Google Play and iTunes, where you can rate and review Remakers Mark, which would mean the world to us. We're on Facebook, search for Math is HardNet or Remakers Mark, Twitter at Remakers Mark, and Instagram at Remakers Mark Podcast. So please join in the discussion there as well. So gentlemen, I feel like we did pretty well. I feel like some of your Sean Connery recasting choices were a little off. But aside from that, I think we did a really good job. So as a reward, may the force be with you.
And also with you.